I strongly welcome this move, and they should do more to bring more people who needed asylum or more of their safe places, especially in Australia.
A new safe haven for Myanmar nationals. It's Friday, May 7th. This is VOA Asia. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. We're online. Find us at VOA Asia Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and YouTube. Also ahead, India's diaspora watching COVID's rage. Afghanistan's Abdullah Abdullah speaks with us. Online home organization. It's all on today's VOA Asia. Australia is offering Myanmar nationals living there a safe haven. Canberra has said it will extend their temporary visas until it is safe for them to return home following February's military takeover. Phil Mercer in Sydney has more.
Canberra has been under pressure to offer a haven to more than 3,300 Myanmar citizens in Australia. More than half of them are students, and their visas will be extended. Many have said they fear persecution or arrest if they return home to a country scarred by weeks of civil unrest after the military in Myanmar ousted the elected government of de facto leader Aung San Suu Kyi. However, it's not clear how long Australia will extend visas for or how it will determine whether and when it's safe for Myanmar nationals to return home. Tozor Lat, the operations director for the Democratic Voice of Burma, a non-profit media organization, said he welcomes the decision to allow them to stay.
I think it is a right move for Australian government to extend visa. It's like in US, and you know, it's about many places, especially overseas student visa is a grant extension. I strongly welcome this move, and they should do more to bring more people who needed asylum or more of their safe places, especially in Australia. I think this is in the right direction.
In Canberra, Immigration Minister Alex Hawke said in a statement that Australia continued to strongly urge the Myanmar security forces to exercise restraint and refrain from violence against civilians, release those detained arbitrarily, and engage in dialogue. Meanwhile, Australia's Home Affairs Department has launched an investigation into relatives of Myanmar's military living in Australia. There are concerns they are either harbouring assets taken from Myanmar or receiving financial support from the military in Myanmar following February's uprising. News reports have suggested that more than 20 family members of senior officials of Myanmar's new military government were living in Australia. Suu Kyi's National League for Democracy party won a landslide victory in an election in November with more than 80% of the vote. She was placed under house arrest in February following the military takeover. Phil Mercer for VOA News, Sydney.
These are among some of the top Asia headlines you'll find right now when you visit voanews.com. Civil society groups urge United Nations arms embargo on Myanmar. India doctor makes desperate plea for oxygen as pandemic supplies dwindle. G7 countries back Taiwan's observer status in World Health Assembly. China's Africa outreach poses growing threat according to U.S. General. Pfizer, BioNTech to donate coronavirus vaccines to Olympians. Expanded coverage of these stories and much more can be found online at Facebook at VOA Asia and our website, voanews.com. We continue with VOA Asia. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. The Indian diaspora living in the United States is watching in horror as India battles a devastating surge of COVID-19. We hear more with VOA correspondent Mariama Diallo.
For Indians living in America, the daily crush of dark news from the homeland is a reminder that the pandemic is far from over. Virginia resident Varsha Mehta.
It's heartbreaking. They don't have beds. People are laying. There is 4,000 people are dying every day, you know, and it's a unbelievable situation.
Indian Americans say the world's largest democracy was not adequately prepared.
India's infrastructure is just not built to handle something like this, just given overcrowding and the amount of people crammed into just small spaces at all times. And I think once the first wave kind of settled down, it was, I mean, like across the world, it was this sense of, okay, back to normal. But I mean, everybody experienced the second wave in some sense, and it's just hitting India a lot harder.
I definitely have like elders in my family who've gotten vaccinated or at least gotten first dose, but you can definitely tell that they hasn't been efficient enough. And you could say that that's the fault of the government probably, to not, you know, be devoted to committing and getting the resources that they need before, you know, lifting all these restrictions and saying that, you know, COVID is not in India right now. It'll be fine.
With over 20.2 million cases, India has the second highest number of COVID-19 infections behind the United States and the third highest number of deaths behind the U.S. and Brazil. Tuesday, White House Press Secretary Jen Psaki told reporters the United States is continuing to send aid to the hard-hit South Asian nation.
Six air shipments funded by USAID have departed the United States, five of which have already arrived in India. These flights include health supplies, oxygen supplies, N95 masks, rapid diagnostic tests, and medicine. And these are a lot of the components that the Indian government has expressed a vital need for. More flights are on the way, with total assistance expected to exceed 100 million.
But for many, the aid may be too late. Michigan resident Kalpana Bakad notes the impact on her family in India.
I have lost an aunt. I have lost a sister-in-law to COVID. And we have had many members of our family who have, you know, who have been impacted by COVID, and they have recovered, luckily, you know. It's real.
For the more than 4 million people of Indian descent in the U.S., a dichotomy of sorts as vaccinations increase in the U.S. and the pandemic rages on an ocean away. Mariama Diallo, VOA News.
Happening now in Asia, prominent Hong Kong pro-democracy activist Joshua Wong has been sentenced to 10 additional months in prison for taking part in an unauthorized assembly last year to commemorate the 1989 Tiananmen Square crackdown. The 24-year-old Wong is already serving a 13-and-a-half-month sentence. Stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia. We've made it to the end of the week. Thanks for being with us on VOA Asia. The United States and its NATO allies have officially begun withdrawing their remaining forces and equipment from Afghanistan. Abdullah Abdullah, the chairman of Afghanistan's High Council for National Reconciliation, discussed the implications for Afghanistan's peace process and the future of the country in part two of a conversation with VOA's Ayesha Tanzim.
There are two competing proposals, one by you, one by President Ghani. Which one is it that you will take to Istanbul?
No, I wouldn't call it two competed proposals. I will say that the main elements of what has been talked about is the same. Peaceful settlement, yes. End state based on one person, one vote, yes. How to get from here to there? There are different scenarios that we can discuss it. We can put it on the table, not as two conflicting views, but something that we can negotiate, each one of them.
Are you saying that you're taking both proposals to Turkey?
No, I mean, the whole thing is that the purpose of getting there in Turkey is to agree to at least to have some understanding beforehand with the Taliban.
So you're saying that there should be some pre-agreement before going to Istanbul. There should be some understanding with the Taliban because it needs to be a meaningful conference.
Some understanding.
Who's doing that negotiation right now?
The conveners are talking to the Taliban as well as us.
So Qataris.
They used to. It's the UN. It's Qatar. It's Turkish government, their representatives, and also the United States, which has been involved in it. The support group, the facilitating countries like Germany, Norway, Uzbekistan, Indonesia, these countries are also behind the scene. They are active.
Is there any contact right now between the Afghan negotiation team and the Taliban? Or
no, at this stage, no.
You're saying the conveners are talking to Taliban. Are there any indications of what the Taliban want? Have they shared any proposal, any idea of what their version of peace looks like?
They leave their position very vague, very general. We want the establishment of Islamic system. What is that Islamic system? How the leaders will be elected or selected? They say that there needs to be an Islamic council. So is it elected Islamic council? If it is elected, on what basis?
The Taliban have sent a letter to a lot of politicians, you included in that list. What is in that letter?
The point is that different groups of Taliban, they make contact with the leaders. Sometimes they send some notes. It's mainly, I've checked with the others as well, the messages are mainly the same. Even there, their position is very vague. And you don't know if there's a position of one group versus another. But again, they talk about the Islamic system, they talk about unified Afghanistan and all of that. That nobody disputes that. But nothing, no clarity whatsoever.
Do you think the Taliban want peace?
I hope. I wish. And I hope.
Abdullah Abdullah, chairman of Afghanistan's High Council for National Reconciliation, speaking in Kabul with VOA's Ayesha Tanzim. During coronavirus-mandated lockdowns, millions of people began following the so-called cleanfluencers, online bloggers who inspired others to clean and organize their homes while gaining useful knowledge about keeping things neat and tidy. Nina Vishneva has the story, narrated by Anna Rice.
These videos are not blockbusters or murder mysteries, but it's hard to take your eyes off these clips. Cleaning videos have gotten especially popular during the pandemic. Cleanfluencers, who are passionate about cleanliness and organizing living spaces, post their home's transformations online and inspire others to do the same.
Today we are going to be doing a whole house clean with me. I always love how good it feels just to get the entire house clean from top to bottom, and I feel like it stays cleaner a lot longer.
Amanda Page from Utah started filming cleaning videos after her third son was born.
I had really bad postpartum depression after having him, and so I just kind of needed an outlet, and so I started the channel as a hobby, and then soon enough, like, it just started growing, and just the response from it was incredible.
Amanda's husband joined her in her cleaning hobby, and their three kids, though small, help as much as they can. Today, their YouTube channel, called This Crazy Life, has over 300,000 subscribers.
Oh, we supposed to clean our washing machine? Listen, don't judge me. I never knew that. Ooh, that one dirty.
Cleaning shower drains, removing mold from the washing machine, the more disgusting it sounds, the more views the video is likely to get. People like watching others do cleaning. The videos are both absorbing and soothing for the psyche, according to researchers.
Repeatedly watching such videos, we begin to associate these videos with how they make us feel. So they make us feel relaxed, calm, satisfied.
Mitchell Creed is a neurologist. Some 8 years ago, he created a thread on Reddit called Oddly Satisfying, filled with videos like that. In no time, he had 6 million followers. And after the coronavirus pandemic struck, cleaning videos became even more popular, giving people an outlet when they found themselves confined to their homes.
People were staying inside for months on end, and they got to clean their house.
On TikTok alone, short clips with the hashtag cleaning got over 8 billion views in 2020. The popularity of cleaning videos will outlive the pandemic. For Nina Vishnyova in New York, Anna Rice, VOA News.
That tidies up our program for the day and for the week. You've been listening to VOA Asia. Thanks for joining us. We'll be back at the same time again Monday. In the meantime, follow us online at Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, and YouTube. We also thank those who help bring the program to you, our service chief, Diane Gao, Ira Melman, Doug Bernard, Keith Lane, and Amy Hybels. I'm Jim Stevenson. We're in Washington. We hope you have a wonderful day ahead. Be safe. Be well.